not like massive numbers for the guy, but like you feel like that's a good addition.
That's a nice addition.
A four touchdown backup tight end.
Yeah. I'm good with that. I mean, we're not looking for a guy to go out there and be gangbusters and, you know, challenge Travis for the starting job.
No, not at all.
You know, so.
229 yards. 229 yards and four touchdowns.
That's Blake Bell right there, right?
Better than Blake Bell.
Yeah.
Blake
who's
Bell.
Your favorite, who's your favorite two-last-name athlete? I am partial to Austin Seferian Jenkins.
That's a pretty good one.
Right?
That's a pretty good one.
Who was that guy that used to play for the Patriots? Why am I drawing a blank on his name?
Tom Brady?
No. He had two names. I'll remember it later when it doesn't matter to this conversation.
Was it Dominique Rogers Cromartie?
Yeah, no, it wasn't him. One. It wasn't
Bill
him.
Bell a check?
It was, yeah, that was the one. Let's just for the sake
Ron
of the,
Kowski?
The no. conversation to move on.
Yeah, no. You'll,
Darius Hayward Bay.
I think Bob would get lost if we went down this.
He was like
this
the law firm. That was what they called him. That was his nickname. What was
Ben Jarvis Green Ellis.
Yes.
Is that it?
Yeah, that's
is that
yeah, it? Yeah, yeah, yeah. Ben Jarvis Green Ellis.
There it
yeah,
is. That's the one then. That's yeah. the one.
So oh, good was, you can't remember his
that
name.
Was, that was really anticlimactic.
Yeah, you're like, because that's not what you were really thinking of, but that's the right answer. And you're like, that's not who I was thinking of, though. I could just hear it in your non-reaction, right?
I just, like, it was so underwhelming be, when you like, said it. Yeah. I thought it was going to be something really good.
But I could just tell. You're like, that's not really
Horatio
what I was thinking.
Horatio would have been a good one. That's. Nobody names anybody Horatio anymore.
Horatio Sands from Saturday Night Live is the only Horatio that I know.
Mm.
And David Caruso's character on CSI Miami.
Don't watch
That's
that.
That's it.
I'm now through seven episodes of Breaking Bad. I know you guys are done with it, but Walter White's brother-in-law, the drug enforcement agent, I have not hated a character
Hank.
I've not hated a character more on television than I hate this guy.
Oh, don't worry. You'll hate Walter White's wife soon enough.
Oh, yeah. Will I? Don't give it away. But we're watching it yesterday, right? And I don't know if you guys have ever felt this way before. I'm getting mad at this guy on TV. Like, I'm just getting pissed by him. And I don't know why I was, but I've never felt that kind of emotion towards a character on a TV show before. But I'm watching this thing, and I am just getting mad at this guy. And I don't know if it's going to continue or what, but right now he's like one of the most unlikable
characters. It's going to continue for a few more seasons.
Is it? Okay.
Hey, you learn to like him, and then you learn to hate him again. That's...
Okay.
Yeah. You pretty much wind up hating everybody.
And then he's gone. I don't want to spoil it for Bob anymore, do we?
No, not at all. I mean, I understand you've had like a decade to get.
Right, yeah. It's been a while. It's been a while, but I'm in the midst of this thing now. Let's not give this thing away.
He's in the throes of it now.
No, there's still plenty of twists and turns to get through. Time for a little today in tournament history. On this date in 1992, Duke wins back-to-back titles, beating Michigan and the Fab Five.
The game is over. The Duke of Destiny has won it. For the first time in two decades, college basketball has a repeat champion.
And that was
Duke
actually of Destiny.
That was actually 1902.
Broadcast no kidding.
Duke and Michigan. Doesn't feel like that long ago, does it? It
felt, yeah, 92,
felt like
two.
It felt like a long, long time ago. But the Duke Blue Devils beating Michigan 71-51.
1992.
Yes.
Yes.
Get out of here.
That audio sounded like it was from 1902.
Yeah, 1902. Somebody's Victrola
photograph or something.
Christian Laettner with 19 points, Grant Hill with 18 points and 10 rebounds, and they beat Michigan. We talked earlier about, like, best teams not to have won it. I don't know if they fall in that category, but Michigan made the championship game twice and lost back-to-back years to Duke and North Carolina. So that may be a team to throw in there as well.
Maybe.
They were still pretty young.
Maybe, yeah.
This was the freshman edition of Michigan, and then the sophomore edition. The ones that lost to North Carolina the following year.
The sophomores.
Speaking of North Carolina, on this date in 2009, they beat Michigan State for the title.
They came out and showed everyone they were the best in college basketball. Right at the beginning.
Yep. No doubt about it.
The performance from the start that could not have been any finer. North Carolina is the 2009 national champion.
call, of course, on CBS with Jim Nance as well. That sounded a little bit closer to 2009.
Yes,
89-72 over Michigan State. It was Roy's second title. This was the Tyler Hansbrough team.
Oh, yeah, remember him.
Ty Lawson, right. Wayne Ellington, Danny Green.
Tyler Hansbrough ever do anything in the NBA? He played for the Pacers, didn't he?
He played for the Pacers. That's it. That's all I can remember. I don't remember him doing anything or if he played for another team or how long it lasted, you know, with the Indiana Pacers.
Boy, there was a place we could go to look this stuff up.
I know, right? Gosh, I wish we had that
and,
capability.
Indiana, Toronto, and Charlotte.
Oh. And you couldn't name a player on the Michigan State team that beat that year.
So. Who go through the roster. Mateen Cleaves had to be on that team, right?
No, that was the team that won it. Goran Sutton.
Okay.
Kalen Lucas.
I remember that name.
Travis Walton. Raymar Morgan. Delvon Rowe were the starters. Yeah, no, that's not a memorable, memorable team.
And they played for the title.
Yeah, yeah.
God, shows you how good Izzo was, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's a team of nobodies.
31-7, a 30-win team.
How many seniors were on that team? Because that's a lot of the times you make it to the Final Four, you look at these rosters.
There was a young Draymond Green.
And they're loaded with seniors. Oh, Draymond Green was on that team?
Yeah. But he only had 7 points in that one and played just 12 minutes. So he
played sparingly.
Youngster. So, yeah, this was not a team you actually remember. That was the second title for Roy Williams of his three national titles, which occurred on this date in 2009. Speaking of the NCAA tournament, they played the 88 replay over the weekend, right?
Yep.
And Danny Manning will join us coming up in about 20 minutes. He's now head coach at Wake Forest and, of course, a member of the pretty big-time member of that 88 Jayhawks National Championship
team. I mean, it was Danny and the Miracles.
That is correct, but he kind of shies away from it being that. But we'll talk to Danny Manning coming up at 9:30. That is today in tourney history. Run it back isn't just fun, it's advantageous. We'll discuss next.
Fesco in the Morning, brought to you by Santa Fe Auto Sound, Kansas City's home for car audio since 1967.
What an advantage that is in this time and place that, first of all, you played later in the year than anybody else, okay? You played into February. Now you'll have all this time off. But when you gather, you're not going to have a team that's going to learn a new offense or anything like that. This is a great move for the Kansas City Chiefs.
Peter King from NBC Sports discussing... It was in the context of the Sammy Watkins decision to bring him back on a restructured deal, but also the advantage the Chiefs have, and they played later in the season, and there's going to be virtually no offseason, it seems, and we may have a delayed start to the season, that they have a huge advantage on the rest of the field. Again, today would have been the first day for the new coaches to start NFL workouts, so they usually give the new coaches an extra time to get ready.
Like
for
2 weeks maybe or something
to
like
get
that?
Ready for their new season. That was to begin today, and that's not happening. So the Chiefs with a major advantage. More so than any other year, bringing everybody back.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's a big advantage because it's not just bringing back all of the players, you're bringing back all of the coaches as well. And there's no, you know, worry about having to break in a new offensive coordinator. Say Eric Bieniemy did get the job, you know, in Cleveland or with the Giants or someplace like that. Even if Mike Kafka was the guy that was promoted to be the new offensive coordinator, they're still breaking in that guy to do that job. And you know, sometimes things, you know, happen for a reason. And Eric Bieniemy not getting one of those jobs that was available is probably beneficial to him as much as it is now beneficial to the Kansas City Chiefs, because the guy who did get the Cleveland job, Mike Stepanski, he's coaching from Minnesota right now. He hasn't even moved to Cleveland yet. So you're seeing situations right now around the NFL that are not ideal for a new coach coming in or even for a new offensive coordinator taking over here in Kansas City. And so we're very fortunate the way things worked out to have our full team intact and to have our entire offensive and defensive of coaching staffs intact as well to come back and go to battle for another championship.
And it's rare coming off a Super Bowl to be able to.
Oh, so rare. Usually your staffs get raided, your players get raided, teams fall apart, you know.
A few players gone, but not many.
Right.
And the entire coaching staff is back intact. It's crazy.
You know, the rest of the league has to be looking around going, son of a gun, man, we got to do this.
We thought we could break them up somehow, some way. Well, you couldn't get it done just yet. More with Peter King on the Sammy Watkins restructuring.
Sammy Watkins is a nice piece to have to your jigsaw puzzle. But in my opinion, right now, it's, you know, they have now retained their major forces in their offense. Like, in my opinion, when Eric Bieniemy, when Frank Kafka and Andy Reid, when they start sitting in and making their game plan, you know, they're going to have a tremendous advantage over the rest of the league. You know why? Because not only do you have Mahomes back, okay, and there is your guy, but every one of his top four weapons, or every one of his top five weapons is now under contract for this year.
And disregard Frank Kafka.
Right,
Mike Kafka,
yeah. But I like the name Frank Kafka.
He's probably got a friend named Frank Kafka.
Yeah, probably. Some guy he drinks coffee with on Tuesdays or something.
Totally. Just he does it all the time. Screws up the guy. Screws up his name. Probably calls Frank Mike, too.
Right.
But bringing the entire coaching staff back, too, is huge.
Yeah.
Eric Bieniemy, I want him to get a head coaching job some way, somehow. This would be a bad, to my opinion, a bad year to be a first-year head coach.
Worst year ever.
I feel for Matt Rhule, Joe Judge, and Kevin Stefanski because the other two at least been coaches before, Rivera and McCarthy,
where
they should be able to handle this, albeit at a new scenario, and would like to have that time. Those first-year guys, I got to imagine there's just stuff coming across your plate you had no idea, and then throw in, coronavirus.
Right, yeah, throw in this as well. I mean, not only are you moving to a new city if you had the opportunity to even move to that city yet, not only are you dealing with a new organization, not only are you dealing with new players, not only are you dealing with new coaches that maybe you haven't worked with before, but you're hiring guys because, you know, you heard good things about them. I mean, there is so much newness to being a new head coach in the NFL, and then to not be able to go to the facility and be a new head coach in the NFL has got to be one of the more difficult things, you know, that's out there right now. And, you know, the good coaches will find ways around it. They won't make excuses for it. They'll go to work. They'll get the job done. They'll find ways, you know, to have their off-season success, even if it isn't with the players and being in front of those players. I'm sure teams like the Giants and the Panthers and the Cowboys, I'm sure there's a big Zoom meeting today that they're all going to be a part of and, you know, talk to the coaches and start to find out, you know, what's going on. And then I'm sure there's also break-off Zoom sessions, you know, where you have your D-backs room and your quarterbacks room and your wide receivers room, and you kind of go Zoom with your coaches, you know, that are going to be your day-to-day coaches, you know, once the season gets started and we can get back to a sense of normalcy in this world, you'll be able to have meetings with those guys. So it's going to be a lot different. There are going to be growing pains. But again, as Scott Pioli has said, you know, and we played his comments earlier, you can either make excuses or you can find solutions. The good coaches and the good organizations like the Chiefs will find solutions. Other organizations like the Browns will make excuses, and we'll be sitting here with the same type of results that we've seen year in and year out from these organizations. And that's why I said earlier in the show, save that 2013 season when Andy Reid came in and stabilized this organization. This is the most important year to have Andy Reid as the head coach of the Kansas City Chiefs, because he's got this, and you can feel confident that our leader is going to put a plan in place that is going to realize success once the season does get started.
You mentioned Scott Pioli, the former Chiefs GM, appeared on our sister station WFAN and the radio.com app about the good versus bad organizations, and you're going to see it this offseason.
This is going to separate the good organizations from the not so good organizations. You know, this is going to give the players that are hard workers are going to have an advantage. People are, you know, players are finding ways to work out. I can't tell you how many players I've talked to in the last couple of weeks who are saying, hey, listen, part of this, you know, my workouts are unbelievable. I'm working out in my garage. I feel like I'm working again. You know, they're back to the substance and away from the sizzle. And, you know, these guys are professionals. They're expected to prepare. This is going to separate the hard workers from the not-so-hard workers. Again, it's going to expose the good organizations from the not-so-well organizations, I think. And it's going to elevate the teams that have people that are truly problem solvers from the excuse makers. And players are either good, they're going to be excuse. It's the same with players. They're going to be excuse makers or they're going to be problem solvers. They know what they have to do. They just don't know when they're going to be, you know, called back to work. So I think the teams that have rosters filled with people that have not only strong work ethic, but good work habits, right? Those two things are different. But the teams that have those kind of players, Mike, they are going to be the ones that advance more quickly.
How about that line there? You're either a problem solver or an excuse maker. That's a brilliant line by Scott Pioli, not just for football, but for life and business and work and this time that we're all living in. You can either be someone that solves the problem and figures out a way to get things done, or you can be someone that sits around and just makes excuses for yourself. Don't be the excuse maker. Be a problem solver. And I bet a lot of these guys kind of like working out again in their you know, garage like they were when they were younger. You're out there. You're working out. You're kind of getting back to, you know, what got you to the NFL.
Friday Night Lights version,
yeah, it
right?
kind of yeah, is, yes. Yeah. Yeah.
You're out bench pressing in your garage. But I guess T.O. would be fine because he was bench pressing in the driveway.
Yeah,
right?
Doing sit-ups in the driveway.
So he's,
and all
the,
that, yeah.
He's the only one that was ahead of the curve for this one. We're going to chat with Danny Manning, the former Kansas Jayhawk, now head coach of Wake Forest. They reran that 88 championship game. We'll discuss with him next.
Fesco in the Morning, brought to you by Santa Fe Auto Sound, Kansas City's home for car audio since 1967.
Danny Manning now will come up to the free throw line with 5 seconds remaining.
This whole game rides on these free throws.
It is only appropriate that for the Kansas Jayhawks, it comes down to Danny Manning at the free throw line.
Go!
Now for an NCAA championship, and no one will be prouder than his papa. Now Danny Manning shooting to give the Kansas Jayhawks their second national championship. Kansas has won it! The Kansas Jayhawks have beaten all odds. They have lost more games than any champion in the history of the NCAA. And Bedlam reigns here in Kansas City as the Jayhawks beat the Sooners 83-79.
It is kind of amazing when we look back at all these past tournaments, how many of those games Brent was on?
All of them.
I know.
Yeah. Yeah, he was the Jim Nance before Jim Nance. And I was watching that game. Like I said, the first time I watched that game from start to finish, and they did a shot of Brent Musburger and Billy Packer, and they had boutonnieres on. This looks so bizarre, seeing them just kind of crammed in there on Press Row doing that NCAA tournament game.
Were you sitting in between them?
I wasn't, no.
Bleep-eating grin?
No, unfortunately, okay. I was not sitting in between them. I wish I was. That's one of those games that I look back on and wish that I was there for, because that's the type of college basketball that I love, man. That was a superstar-filled college basketball atmosphere at Kemper Arena. Not only was it...
And Kemper. Kemper ties into that, too.
It does. Yeah, no question sure. It does. Absolutely does. And it's the 50th anniversary of the Final Four. You've got one of the most storied programs in the history of college basketball in Kansas. They're 35 miles away. Their practice, you know, the fire marshal had to come because there were too many people in Kemper Arena to watch the Jayhawks practice. And then, you know, you had an Oklahoma team that year that featured five guys that I believe went on to the NBA out of their starting lineup. So it really was. I mean, like, you had a young Duke team. Steve Kerr was shown in the crowd as his team had lost in the Final Four. I mean, it was really a fun watch to go back and see the Jayhawks win that thing and being tied 50-50 at halftime. It's amazing, you know, that Kansas pulled that game off because Oklahoma had so many stars on that team.
We are joined now by Danny Manning, the head coach at Wake Forest and, of course, star on that 88 Jayhawks team. Good morning, Danny. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning. How are you?
We're doing terrific. I saw you tweeted out about the replay of the 88 championship game. Were you able to watch it this weekend? And how many times have you watched it in the past?
I did not watch it. I've watched it maybe once or twice in its entirety. But it's still a great memory, obviously. So, it's always nice when the Final Four rolls around, NCAA tournament rolls around, because it provides such a great memory.
It really does, I think, for a lot of people. And really for me, you know, looking at that game, realizing what you guys had to overcome in Oklahoma, I forgot how loaded that team was. How were you guys able to go out there and beat those guys when on paper they already beat you a couple of times that year? But, man, on paper, that was a legit, like, NBA team at that point in time.
Yeah, Coach Tubbs' team, they were very, very talented and had some great players. You know, you talk about Mookie Blaylock and Stacey King and Harvey Grant. Those guys were spectacular college players and have terrific pro careers as well. And, you know, for us, I think there was a level of familiarity. I'm playing them in our league a couple times and losing to them throughout the course of the season. And each time you would watch, play somebody, we would come back the next day and watch the game with Coach Brown. And we would break down our mistakes and things we needed to do better the next time we played any team. And so for us, the level of familiarity was something that we thought was very beneficial.
The pace of that championship game seemed to favor Oklahoma in the first half, and I know there was some quotes from Coach Brown afterwards that I couldn't tell them to slow down. Why did you play so fast maybe in that opening half?
Just enjoying the moment. You know, I mean, you're playing for a national championship. You're playing up against a team that is known for up-tempo and fast-paced play. And, you know, Coach Brown always wanted us to be aggressive. And, you know, we had some opportunities in that first half to be aggressive, and we pushed tempo, and it was a terrific half. And, you know, we're fortunate that we go in at halftime tied up.
Yeah, it was a great half. And as I'm watching this game, it wasn't just a great half. It was a great game, Danny. And that's what I miss from this, you know, version of college basketball that we're in right now. I miss everything that 88 game was all about. The fast pace, the 50-50 halftime score, you scoring in the 80s, them almost getting to the 80s, superstars on both sides. How do we get college basketball to that 88 title game type of atmosphere?
Well, you know what? I think it's just a different era now. I think you look at the teams and the players, not just that played in the championship game with us in Oklahoma, but, you know, you talk about Arizona and the players they had with Steve Kerr and Sean Elliott and Tolbert. I mean, they were really a talented team. And I think just in our generation and our era, players stayed in college a lot longer than the current players are in today's era.
Now, you had the chance to probably leave before that season even started. What went into the decision for you to even come back for that campaign?
It was real simple. My dad and Coach Brown told me I wasn't ready. That was pretty much how that went down. So, you know, and you know what? To be honest with you, I wasn't. From the standpoint of maybe basketball, I would have figured some things out and got through it. But I think just for life and making the best decisions for me moving forward, because I get to my rookie year in the NBA and I blow my knee out. And at that point in time, that's considered a career-threatening injury. And so for me, the experience, the maturity, the things that I went through in college helped prepare me to handle that situation. And unfortunately for me, I had it two more times. And so, you know, my time at Kansas, all 4 years definitely helped prepare me to have a 15-year career. So I'm very fortunate and blessed in that sense.
It wasn't always smooth sailing during that year where you guys won the title. Did you regret it any time, that decision at that point? Because that wasn't the easiest of seasons. You guys had to rally even late to think about the postseason.
Yeah, I mean, we started out the season. I mean, we were, I want to say there were, one ranking had us a preseason number one with everyone that we had coming in. And, you know, things don't always go to what's put on paper, so to speak. And, you know, we had some different situations that we had to navigate as a team. And, you know, the bottom line is Coach Brown came up with a game plan and figured out a way for us to win games. And we went out and we tried to execute that game plan to the best of our ability night in and night out. And we got hot at the right time, and you know, we were a bunch of guys that enjoyed playing together, cared for one another, and didn't mind sacrificing for each other, and that put us in a situation to have a chance to win a national championship.
We're talking with Danny Manning here on 610 Sports Radio. The 88 game was shown over the weekend, the national championship game. And, you know, I can't help but think, you know, Larry Brown is the greatest basketball coach of all time, winning in college, winning in the pros, winning in high school, winning the Olympics. Like this guy is as accomplished as you can get. Do you feel like he's the best basketball coach of all time?
Well, to me, he's the best coach I've played for. And I've had some great coaches. But, you know, the impact that he's had on me, my teammates, what we're able to accomplish, what he's been able to accomplish as a coach, has been nothing short of, you know, spectacular. And he's a Hall of Famer because of that. And so for us, I mean, Coach Brown was a very challenging coach to play for, but he made you a better person, he made you a better player. But at the end of the day, that's what you're asking for. So, you know, definitely in my book, the best coach I've ever played for.
Do you still talk with him today about things when you're coaching and maybe going through tough times or whatever? Do you look to him? Is he kind of a mentor to you?
Coach Brown sends out messages, yes. He watches the majority of the players' games that he had as players that are coaching now. And, you know, he'll send out helpful reminders and different things that he sees out there that he feels can help you and on your journey as a coach. So, you know, Coach Brown is somebody who he'll always be connected to the game, always in some way, shape, or fashion. And right now he's not a coach or doing anything, but, you know, I'm quite sure he's still watching different facets of games and writing different ideas down and things of that nature.
I don't know how he has enough time in the day to keep track of kind of the coaching tree and the former player tree that are now involved with coaching, Coach.
Yeah, I mean, he's got a lot of guys that have come through, and men, excuse me, that have, you know, really had a chance to flourish up under his guidance and continue to do that at the professional level, at the collegiate level. You know, Coach Brown has been very influential, and he's been someone that has helped a lot of us in our respective careers, whether it's playing or coaching in the game of basketball.
Talking with Danny Manning, and we should be having championship games tonight, man. This should be the night where Kansas is crowned a champion yet again, and obviously that was taken away because of this time that we're living in. What was your reaction when you heard the tournament was going to get canceled?
This is a very serious situation that we're in. You know, whenever something of this magnitude hits and cancels events like this is canceled, you know it's something that we need to take seriously and figure out the best way that we can all get through it, learn from it, and move on and hopefully not be in a situation like this again.
What are you doing like now? Like what's a day like for Danny Manning right now?
A lot of phone calls, a lot of texts, you know, reaching out to my team, trying to stay connected. Recruiting calls, recruiting texts, emails, you know, you have conference calls and things of that nature talking about the situation here and what's going on with our university. So, you know, it's your day gets away from you pretty quickly when you're making calls and sending out a lot of texts to your players and recruits.
Is there any concern in your mind about college basketball starting up again next season?
It's going to start up again eventually. When, I'm not quite sure. But I do know at some point it will start up again. And, you know, my task and all the staff's task that are coaching athletes right now, student athletes in college, is to stay connected and let them know that we care about them. We want them to be safe. And, you know, we miss them, we love them, and we can't wait till we have a chance to be back together again. But until then, you know, we've got to make some really smart decisions and take care of ourselves.
Make sure you check in on Rex Walters. I saw him tweeting out plays yesterday. He was looked like he was getting a little stir-crazy.
Yeah, that'd probably be an accurate assessment for Rex. You know, he's into it like a lot of us basketball coaches. And, you know, he likes sharing a lot of different things.
Coach, thanks for the time today. Thanks for catching up. And hopefully we're talking about college basketball resuming shortly. But thanks once again for your time today.
Thank you. Have a great day.
That's Danny Manning, former Kansas Jayhawk, of course, now head coach at Wake Forest. We didn't get into this with him, Bob, and unfortunately, their season actually ended. They were one of the few games that like got done. Yeah, they played in the ACC tournament on the opening day.
Yeah.
And lost.
I don't think anybody wants to talk about that.
No, but I mean, you know what I mean? Like, there's a lot of like teams that didn't finish. I don't know if it's good or bad that you did finish. You know what I mean?
No, I think it's bad. It's real bad.
You wanted to keep your season
was actually done. How'd that happen? You must have stunk.
You wanted to keep playing, but they played their last game on March the 10th, right before kind of everything, of course, on that Wednesday and Thursday ended up kind of closing down college basketball at that point in time. But of course, part of the 88 national championship team at Kansas, and they replayed that game on CBS Sports Network over the weekend. The voting is now complete. We have a winner. He is gone, but definitely not forgotten. Next.
FESCO in the Morning, brought to you by Santa Fe Auto Sound, Kansas City's home for car audio since 1967.
Our thanks to Danny Manning, former Kansas Jayhawk great, who in my experience with Danny, and obviously he was on, when I got to know him, he was assistant coach in Kansas, right?
Yeah, responsible for all the bigs doing their thing,
and,
right?
And about as humble a person as you'll ever find. Never really wanted to talk about his accomplishments and his doings. I used to ask players, did you know of Danny Manning? And it was always no, but my dad did, or my uncle did, or whoever. It was funny because there was just enough of a gap between the current players that they didn't know how awesome Danny was.
Oh, how accomplished he was. And one of the great college players of all
and
time.
And he's not going to tell you about it, right?
No,
and
God
not,
no.
I mean, there's some great examples.
Do you know who I am?
There's some great examples, though, from that team, that championship team that, lost a bunch of games. And then,
they had 11 losses, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, there was still the most to win a title, right?
Perry Ellis was on that team, right?
He was. He was.
Perry was not
redshirted.
Perry was not on that team. But then had to win, 9 of 11 or whatever to even – to rally late to get themselves in the field.
Yeah.
Those types of things.
Were they a sixth seed that year, right?
I mean, there's so many lessons to be learned from that team, but he's not the type that we go, I'll tell you what happened back in 87, 88, my team.
Right.
But there's some great lessons to be learned from a coaching perspective, to stay with it and to push through and to make adjustments on the fly. They had a bunch of injuries that happened and an ineligible player and,
what happened with Otis Livingston that year too? Because he was there for and then disappeared.
And they had a bunch of stuff to overcome. And it's like a perfect coaching story. But I'm sure he's too humble to use that team as inspiration. And he said he watched the game once or twice, but that highlight was on every time he stepped into the arena at Allen Fieldhouse as well. So, about as humble. You wouldn't know who he was except for he's really tall.
Right, sure.
You'd be like, if you didn't know who he was, he wasn't going to tell you.
Right.
Type, you know,
right. Yeah, no, you're right. It is rare for a superstar athlete, and Danny Manning was a superstar athlete. I mean, he ran Lawrence, Kansas for all those years, being the big man on campus. I mean, he was the guy that, ran that team. It was Danny and the Miracles. It wasn't Milton Newton and the Miracles or Scooter Barry and the Miracles.
And he didn't like that term either.
Right.
He didn't like Danny and the Miracles.
And the Miracles.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, right.
Yeah, Milton Newton and the Miracles sounds like a great band,
by the way. Sounds like a doo-wop band.
Sounds like a great
doo-wop-a-doo-wop. Singing under the streetlight in South Philly or something like that. Yeah.
Doing that slide to the microphone thing, you know?
Yeah.
But he would even shudder when it was uttered that way. You know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
Just like a really unique, like I said, unique superstar.
Yeah.
He's a superstar.
And he was a superstar. Very quiet, very, very, very soft-spoken superstar. But when you asked him why he didn't go to the NBA, and he goes, well, my dad and Larry told me I wasn't ready. And that's all it took? Like that's all it took back then was for those guys to say, you're not ready to go. And he goes, oh, okay. And he went back to playing college ball. Could you imagine that now?
Well, there was
how many guys has Bill probably told you weren't ready? They went, and now you don't hear from them again.
I mean, there was a piece I read, too, about, Mom getting involved too, and he really wanted to go, and Mom was like, yeah, she gave all the reasons not to come back, and then Coach did, and then wanted to play with Archie Marshall, who was injured, and try to win a national championship together and those types of things. So there were plenty of reasons to do so. But and then Larry Brown's uncertainty too.
I mean, yeah, sure.
That whole it didn't just
Larry Brown's still uncertain today.
Right. But there was a very much uncertainty at that time whether or not he was going to jump to the NBA when he was at Kansas. So yeah, all those factors in. I mean, he could have very well just left for the NBA and would not have had that. Would not have had the memories of that title run.
Right.
And as he mentioned, he said, he thought the maturity that he picked up from staying longer helped him in the NBA, especially when he got injured.
All those injuries. Yeah. And you have to wonder too. Had Larry left a year earlier, does Kansas go out and hire Roy Williams? Is Roy Williams even suggested to Kansas by Dean Smith, or do they go another kind of direction and hire somebody else who possibly could have been, the head coach that obviously wouldn't have had the success that Roy Williams had at KU? So, again, we talk about at this point in time in our lives, everything happening for a reason, and there's a reason why things are happening, and you got to look for the good and all of that kind of stuff. The good in all of this was that we got Danny for one extra year, a national championship, but Larry also stayed an extra year and gave Roy Williams the ability to take over that program and turn it into something better than what Larry had it, even though they didn't win a national championship. I mean, Roy Williams was so successful, and then handing it off to Bill Self, who had more success than Roy Williams had running that program at the University of Kansas.
Pretty,
it's been remarkable.
It's amazing sometimes to look at the dominoes if they didn't fall.
Yeah, oh God, yes.
What what might have been if
yeah.
could be bad,
right.
As opposed to sometimes the good. All right, the gone but not forgotten bracket is now complete. We have taken 32 and we have whittled it down to a winner. The champion of the gone but not forgotten bracket here on Fesco in the Morning is the 7th seed, Andy Studebaker. Congratulations to Andy. 61-39 over Tomorrow Vanover in the championship round in a vaunted 7-8 matchup.
Yeah, that's a route. That's like what we call a route. Not a Stanford route, but a route, man.
Studebaker beat Jimmy Gobble in the opening round. Arkell Truluck, Mike Maslowski, Dexter McCluster, and then Tomorrow Vanover on his way to the championship.
He had one hell of a road.
Go through who he beat again.
His path was as rocky as any.
Jimmy Gobble.
Yeah.
Arkell Truluck.
Okay.
Mike Maslowski.
That's a good one.
Who some had complained it should have been a top seed.
What's it matter?
Dexter McCluster, who was having a heck of a tournament before Andy derailed him. And then Tomorrow Vanover was kind of on cruise control as an 8th seed. He was dumping the field. And then Studebaker takes him down 61-39
yeah.
in the championship.
Andy will join us tomorrow at 8 o'clock
to claim his prize,
that is.
You going to give him like a Smokehouse Barbecue gift card or something?
Yeah, we probably could. I mean, once
this whole COVID blows over.
Andy tweeted out, got some support.
Yeah, he did.
To win this
he swung the vote. I'm going to say it. He swung the vote. There was about 100 votes tabulated up to that point. He wasn't getting housed, but he was definitely trailing. He was trailing early.
And, hey, man, that sometimes when you get out and you campaign and you use your resources,
right.
You can rock the vote. Andy Studebaker did that,
baby. He did rock the vote.
He did. He had Pearl Jam out there trying to get people to vote for him. It was good.
So Andy Studebaker will join us tomorrow. He works with the NFLPA now, too. So not only can he claim his title, but he can kind of discuss what he's hearing, what's been happening, what he's telling players about what to expect this offseason, because he's still obviously very tight with his work with the league.
Yeah, it'd be very interesting to get his perspective, and maybe he'll tell us, but he's sequestered somewhere where he's not – like, didn't expect to be. Let's just put it that way. So, he's not sequestered.
So, he's
going
to have to wait to take the trophy home? Is that what you're telling me?
Yeah, I think he's going to have to wait a little bit before he can come pick up the trophy. Give us an opportunity to get one made, I would imagine, right now, right?
Sure, I guess. Like,
hopefully he'll forget about it before it's time to pick it up and we'll have to make one.
I know a guy. We'll get him one of those Extreme Grand Prix ones.
Right. I'm sure. Wait, what else they got going on now, too, right? So, they can probably get one of those done for us as well.
That'll be good.
I like it. So, yeah, congratulations to Andy Studebaker. But it'd be interesting to get his kind of point of view of what the Players Association is being told to say versus some of the questions that he's getting asked and some of the concerns that he's getting. As we heard earlier today, there is a Major League Baseball player by the name of Joe Kelly, who is a non-essential employee, in my opinion, of Major League Baseball, is concerned that if Major League Baseball has to play without fans or with fans and they have to wear masks as players, guys aren't going to be able to spit tobacco, and that's a big concern. So I don't know if football players are having that kind of same concern or if they have any concerns at all for getting back and getting ready to go amidst the COVID.
Hey, each player has their own specific concerns, and sometimes they just might not be with the masses.
Yeah, well, that's true.
I'm guessing masks and chewing tobacco, while not at the forefront of some players' brains, now that Joe Kelly has said it publicly, there's probably quite a few others that are thinking it.
Probably a couple of other guys went,
oh, that's right. Oh. I couldn't. I didn't realize
I
couldn't.
How am I going to spit my dip? Well, then don't play. I mean, I really don't care. Sit in your home and dip in a cup.
So, yeah. Do you want to hear from Joe? Do we have time to hear from Joe Kelly really quick?
I think so. Can we pass it up?
Yes. He appeared on our sister station, WEEI, in Boston on one of their podcasts, and he's not a fan of being accommodating to a return to baseball.
Be very comfortable.
I understand. Well,
I mean, what about the guys that like to chew tobacco during the game?
That's a very good point.
No, it's not.
I know plenty of guys that – I mean, I know it's not supposed to be done. But I know plenty of guys that are chewing tobacco. Like, how are you going to spit? You're going to have to keep going up and down. You're touching your mouth. Like, it's going to be worse for you. I don't think, unless they made some kind of mask with a little hole in it, but then it defeats the purpose. So,
how about the mouth cancer?
I think if that was a thing, like, hey, Major League Baseball, we'll let you guys play, but you have to have no fans and surgical masks. I still think people would say no just because they wanted to do tobacco.
Oh, unless Kelly. Major League Baseball makes reasonable accommodations for this thing they don't want us to do anyway, I'm not right. playing.
Yeah, screw this. If I can't spit tobacco, I'm out.
Joe Kelly. America's
boy.
Speaking for baseball.
If you're an athlete and you do that at this day and age, you're not going to get asked back once it's all cleared up and we're mask-free.
Coming up on Cody and Gold, the Chiefs are going to spend every dollar of cap space. That's next.
Talk to you later.